It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. What is going on, Pacer Nation? Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. Sorry, guys, I'm laughing because Facci's just like sitting here looking so upset, shaking his head.
He's just so disappointed.
I'm trying to be like incredibly negative to start the show out with, but I can't help it. Like, Facci's over here just so upset, and I get why. The Pacers lose 130-121 after leading by 10 heading into the half as Jalen Brunson leaves early in the first quarter with a foot injury. Doesn't play the rest of the first half, comes back, and just obliterates the Pacers in the second half. OG Anunoby leaves at the end of the third quarter with a hamstring injury, does not return to the game. That'll be interesting to see because OG has had some injuries that have kept him out. And the Knicks cannot afford to lose OG Anunoby for the rest of the series. I understand the Pacers are down 2-0, but that is something that the Knicks can't afford to lose OG Anunoby for any significant amount of time because when they've been without him, they've not been as good. So, anyway, Facci, a lot to get to here, but 130-121, Pacers crapped the bed in the second half and just really allowed New York to jump all over them, dominate them in the second half, and it really just showed you the difference this Knicks team is when they have Jalen Brunson versus when they don't.
That's true. Without Jalen Brunson, I mean, this Knicks team looked like a shell of a team, yet it just felt like you didn't know what the status was going to be. OG had a great first half to be able to keep them in it. But totally different team with Jalen Brunson. Brunson, you know, just exploded in that second half, 23 points. He's a very special player. But for the Pacers, I don't feel bad for you. Brunson missed a full quarter. OG missed about a quarter and a half. And the Pacers weren't able to capitalize. Injuries are the worst part. I was not thrilled for any injuries, period. But if the Pacers couldn't take advantage of a Knicks team that's already very thin in the rotation, then I worry, and this is yet another game that Indiana let slip away.
No, they really did, and honestly, you know, it all starts with that third quarter. They did have a 10-point lead heading into the half without Brunson. Definitely felt like they could have been up by more than just 10 points, but, you know, you take a 10-point lead, you feel decent about that, but the way the Pacers just showed up as the Knicks punched them in the mouth in the third quarter, they just fell apart. It was really disappointing, and I tweeted about it a couple different times, but I was just really disappointed with how discombobulated the entirety of the offense got. And I know New York played with more intensity, more physicality, but Indiana just didn't match it. They just laid down and just, you know, took their punches on the chin. And here's what I'm going to say. And we saw finally Rick Carlisle go to McConnell, Obi Toppin with maybe he subbed in just Obi Toppin for Siakam with about like 7 minutes left to go in the third quarter. I think that when the Knicks go on like a 6-7-0 run like that to start the quarter, you got to make those substitutions quicker. This ain't the regular season. This is the playoffs. There's a reason why the Knicks are playing seven guys at most. You know, they had to play a couple more guys because of injuries tonight, but like you're not seeing a very deep rotation with this Knicks team, and there's a reason why. When Toppin and McConnell are playing as well as they have played the first two games, and Neesmith and Nimhardt and guys like that aren't playing their best. You got to make those subs sooner, in my opinion, and let those guys that have had success go out there and get the minutes that you need, because having them try to claw back from, you know, double-digit deficits every single time they get on the court, they're exhausted by the time they get the lead, you know, close for the Pacers.
The bench was fantastic tonight, and I truly believe that, you know, at least T.J. McConnell deserved to be in the game late in the fourth quarter, obviously if it was within reach, but, you know, when the game mattered. And I feel like Obi Toppin was another one of those players that the bench was all positives. You had Obi being a plus 9, Isaiah Jackson plus 11, McConnell plus 10, Ben Shepherd plus 12. The starters just it did not bring it tonight. Haliburton had a really big first half, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But just to touch on your point before, the Pacers were simply just a better team with Obi Toppin and T.J. McConnell on the floor. And we know that it's not expected for them to be finishing games, but it felt like night and day when those players were out. The Pacers just were not battling on defense the same way that T.J. McConnell was really battling with Brunson and giving it everything he had. I just felt like you felt the difference, and Aaron Neesmith was someone that we've been able to count on all season defensively. I just felt like tonight he looked lost at times, and that was very tough to see.
Yeah, so to start that third quarter, the Pacers go 3 of 7 before they make that timeout, before Obi Toppin comes into the game, and I think the Knicks had taken the lead at 84-79 at this point. They went 3 of 7, and then they had about 4 turnovers. So that's just not going to cut it. And, you know, New York, we knew they were going to come out playing well, but, you know, this is what we talked about last episode, and we've talked about it, you know, when with my recap with Derek Schultz. Like, this is a really tough matchup for Tyrese Haliburton, because
it shows.
Defensively, the Knicks probably, I wouldn't say they're 3 best players, but man, DiVincenzo has been playing great. Josh Hart's someone that, you know, Haliburton can struggle with defensively. And obviously you can't put him on Brunson. And then OG Anunoby, when he's out there, like there's nowhere to hide Tyrese Haliburton. And I thought that he looked better in the minutes, obviously, when Jalen Brunson went out and McBride was on the court, because that was more of a favorable matchup for him. So I'll just say this, like the Pacers are having a hard time defensively slow things down. And the reason why their bench has played better is because their bench has been better defensively. And I know their bench has been clicking offensively, but, you know, Stan Van Gundy was saying it multiple times on this broadcast tonight. Where's T.J. McConnell? He needs to be guarding Brunson. He's been giving him the most difficulty of anybody on the Pacers team. And you heard different people throw out, oh, put Siakam on him, put Neesmith on him. Like, no. Jalen Brunson has been used to playing against size the entire season. When you put somebody that's around the same height as him, a little bit smaller, that can get underneath him a little bit, I think it's a more difficult game for him to try to figure out. I'm not saying Brunson couldn't handle McConnell, because Brunson's been fantastic this entire series, but I think that McConnell has given him the most fits. And I know T.J. McConnell plays 1,000 miles per hour, so he doesn't have as much stamina as maybe a Nimhardt does or things like that. But I feel like Rick is going to have to kind of go to McConnell a little bit more. I wouldn't change the starting five right now, but I think I would play him more minutes. Maybe there's a game where you see McConnell play closer to 28, 30 minutes compared to what he's been playing.
28 is probably where I saw it at. So he played 23 minutes tonight. I do think that he's earned a few extra minutes. You know, Ben Shepherd's played well as well, but I don't think you're going to take those 5 minutes from Haliburton. So I do think they could come at the expense of Ben Shepherd. But right now, for what we've seen for the first 2 games, T.J. McConnell has absolutely been one of the best Pacers. I don't think anyone else has been as consistent as McConnell, except for Obi Toppin.
Yeah,
I think those two players have been very consistent so far. But for everybody else, the starters, this was a tough showing. It really was. And I think for Haliburton, I want to give him credit, because in that first quarter specifically, he came out guns blazing, had about 8 shots in that first quarter. At halftime, he had 22 points. We saw an awesome just first half performance from Haliburton. Fantastic. Finishes the game with 34. That means he had just 12. Only 2 of those 12 came in the third quarter, when really Indiana just watched it completely unravel. They're outscored 36-18. And in that span, Dante DiVincenzo is someone that went off for 12. So I just felt like it was a tough stretch for Indiana. But in that third quarter, I mean, there was really nobody that was to be found. And for Haliburton, it kind of, the 34 points on paper, it looks strong, but we know that second half was not like that first half.
The Pacers front court has got to be significantly better if they want any chance of winning. This front court, Faji, they combined to go 12 of 36 from the field for 26 points. 26 points. OG Anunoby had 28 himself. OG Anunoby outscored the entire Pacers starting front court, and he didn't even play in the fourth quarter. That is problematic. Aaron Nesmith has become a shell of himself. I know you talked about Ben Shepherd's minutes being taken. I think Aaron Nesmith, and I'm not even trying to be, you know, hot takey here, I think Ben Shepherd has played better than Aaron Nesmith. Aaron Nesmith gets lost so many times defensively. I don't know how many times he left DiVincenzo wide open in the fourth quarter for big shots.
He killed me. It looked like he was so late trying to navigate around screens. You give DiVincenzo a step, he's that good of a three-point shooter that he will make you pay for it. And I just feel like right now, you can't have a series where Dante DiVincenzo, no offense to him because he's a very good player, but you can't have a series where DiVincenzo is averaging, you know, anywhere from, you know, 22 to 25 points. It's just that can't happen. Good player, but so far in the two games, he's averaging 26.5 points per game against the Pacers. That's just something you can't allow.
Yeah, and I mean, Siakam, I mean, this is the reason you trade for this guy. And he had 19 points last game, thought he was, you know, okay, but not great. This game, 14 points on 18 shots. Siakam has to be better. Siakam has to be that number two guy. And and so far, Obi Toppin has outplayed him in the first two games. I've felt better when Toppin's gone in the game. And, you know, it's not like I'm saying the Pacers shouldn't look to bring him back or anything like that. I'm just saying that Siakam's got to be better. And hopefully he will. But we kind of saw this after the first two games against Milwaukee. He wasn't that great in the Bucks series until game six. And I know that people talk about what he can do defensively and just gives you size of the four and things like that. All that's true. But he needs to be better offensively and get in spots where he can actually impact the game. I mean, when you see OG and Anunoby going at you like he's going at you, you got to match that on the other end. And I'm not saying to force things like that because I know people were getting on Pacers Twitter like, oh, man, this is annoying about Halliburton being, you know, under such a small microscope with every time that he shoots the basketball. They're like, oh, he's got more points than he had in the entire game last time. You know, like you said last episode, it's not going to be hard to match that or you know, do better than that. So to me, it was like Siakam, like he's your number two guy here with Halliburton. And it's like these two together, we've yet to really see them both have great games. And you're not going to win without your 1-2 punch. Jalen Brunson's been great for the Knicks, but let's be honest. He's had a lot of help from Hart. He's had a lot of help from DiVincenzo. And then in this game, OG Anunoby carried the load for him, like you mentioned in the first quarter when he was out. So it's like Halliburton can drop 34 points in the game, but who's he getting help from? McConnell and Toppin, that's the only people that can really help? That's problematic.
It is problematic. We're in the second round of the playoffs. I'm sorry, Obi Toppin, you've played fantastic. It's alarming if Obi Toppin's been one of our best scorers over at least the last three games, dating back to, you know, that closeout game against the Bucks. But for Siakam, finished the game with 14 points. He had 10 at halftime.
Yeah.
He finished the game 7 of 18 shooting. The second half, he went 2 for 8. Can't happen. Actually, 2 for 10.
Yeah,
all right. Can't happen.
And two missed free throws again.
Exactly. And the free throws is a great way to kind of segment into, because Siakam right now, he's been missing free throws quite often, and I know the team did. As a team, they shot 10 of 17 from the free throw line, and that's not acceptable. But Siakam against the Bucks shot 46% from the free throw line. Terrible. So far in this series against the Knicks, he's 2 of 6. Pascal Siakam cannot be shooting near 40% from the free throw line and be one of the Pacers' best players. It cannot happen. I know you're never going to go, you know, it's hard to go 90% for the free throw line, but we've seen the Pacers do it. But in a game like this where they miss 7 free throws and they lose by 9, I'm sorry, but that is unacceptable.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, that's, you know, Siakam's getting paid a lot of money. And, you know, Draymond Green said in the first round preview, like, if the Pacers want to beat the Bucks, like, he's got to be the number one option. Man, he's just getting completely taken out of this game. And I know that he didn't really come out in the fourth quarter because the Pacers played a bench unit with him as the other guy out there to be that five. But I just felt like he looked tired. at the end of the quarter, and he allowed so many offensive rebounds. You know, the Pacers giving up 7 offensive rebounds in that fourth quarter to the Knicks. The Knicks won the rebounding battle by 10, but they didn't win the offensive rebounding battle, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was either like maybe they won by one, or it was like a – did the Pacers win the offensive rebounding battle?
No, Indiana won the offensive rebounding battle 14-12. Right. They were doing so much better before that fourth quarter, like you mentioned. Now that's 7 offensive rebounds, like you said, in this game, in the fourth quarter. 6 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter last game. That's a big difference. You're seeing – we thought the Knicks would tire out. Slim rotation. Pacers going to run. The Knicks are keeping up with us right now, and they're actually having more energy in the fourth quarter when it matters most on those 50-50 plays. Like, you know, got to give them credit. Hartenstein dives for a ball, and it ended up rolling out on Halliburton's leg. Like, you're seeing that effort of guys just tipping the ball around, and, you know, you don't want to say you respect it because it makes it seem like, hey, look, you know, you like what you're seeing, but it's just like, why can't that be the Pacers right now? Where is the, like, that moment, like, in game 3 where Andrew Nembhard was battling for all those, offensive rebounds against the Bucks, and, like, that made the difference. The Pacers have to show up in these fourth quarters, and thus far through 2 games, they really haven't.
No, they really haven't. And one thing that I've really noticed, too, about this Pacers team the last 2 games, they start out in the first half, you know, yeah, probably mostly the first half, like, really attended to the details. They're paying attention to, okay, we got to prioritize boxing out. We got to prioritize controlling the glass. And they did that. And they really did that in the first quarter. Like, that's what got them back into the game when they were down by 11 points and they went on that 11-0 run. It was just offensive rebounding, crashing the glass. But what do you see as the game, you know, continues? The Pacers revert to their old habits. They're not a good rebounding team. They pay a lot of attention to it in the first half because it's fresh in mind. And then they come out in the second half, and when things start to get a little bit, you know, dicey, they kind of revert to who they are, and they kind of forget what they're supposed to be doing out there. And you can see it in the last 2 games. Like, it's like just the rotations are terrible defensively, moving slow off their guys to recover. I haven't felt like in the first quarter, like, Siakam and Turner, like, especially Turner, looked like his feet were stuck in cement half the time. And it's like, I've liked Isaiah Jackson's minutes better in certain stretches these first 2 games than Turner's minutes. Because at least Isaiah Jackson, he might get beat, but he'll recover and block a shot. And if Turner's not hitting any shots or really being impactful, like, I feel like Isaiah's a better rebounder. So you're going to get more. Get
3 offensive rebounds in this game.
Right. I mean, so you're going to get more activity on the glass with Jackson out there. And I understand these are your starters. And Carlisle said on the radio that I trust these guys. I'm not going to pull them out. But it's like, that's great that you trust them. I'm happy that you trust them. That's great. But there's a reason why Rick Carlisle got ejected in this game. He was fed up with the crap. And it wasn't just the officiating. I mean, the officiating tonight was much, much better than it was in game 1. There was missed calls. Definitely there was missed calls in that game that the Pacers were not the beneficiary of. They got screwed on some stuff. I'm not going to lie.
Halliburton got shoved in the back by Josh Hart. Like, I mean, that was crazy.
The moving screen on Turner when Brunson just falls to the ground. Yeah. Like,
there was plenty of those. And
the
I
double
know.
Dribble that gets called an inadvertent whistle and when they can't overturn a kick ball. Are you kidding me?
It's just crazy that that's even a thing. Like, oh, no, you know, you can't overturn a kick ball. But, yeah, that double dribble that got taken back broke Carlisle. I feel like he was never able to recover from that. And, well, you know, look at it's, at this point, the game was, you know, it is what it is. And
right.
He got ejected, but.
It's the principle, though.
It is.
And that's what's really frustrating, you know. And I'm not sitting here saying the officials cost the game because we've been going for probably, 15 minutes, right, before we get into the officiating?
Yeah.
And I'm not blaming the officials. I thought there were some crappy calls and I tweeted about them for sure. But, you know, Rick Carlisle has every reason to be upset. And if he were to go to the press conference tonight and rip the officiating and get fined, I would love it. I wish he would do that more often. I know that he's trying to keep his, you know, head clear and like this is a young team and you don't want to give the officials the benefit of the doubt. But like, I don't know how many times I saw New York, you know, especially when they were crashing, pushing in the back, things like that, not getting called for anything. And I'm sure Indiana's doing it too at points. Like, it's going to happen. But, like, everything is being viewed so tightly from everybody because of all the crap that happened last game and the officiating that was, you know, blown there. So, anyway, I don't know how you can overturn that. But regardless, the starters, they got to be better. The bench, they've showed up multiple times throughout this series already. And it's really apparent that you can trust them. But it's now, are you going to get any good play from Aaron Nesmith? Is Miles Turner going to step up and be better than he was, because I know he had 23 points in the first game, but he had two rebounds. He's, to me, he has yet to put a complete game together against this Knicks team. And I think Hartenstein really just, you know, ran circles around him tonight.
No, he really did. And for Hartenstein, I mean, you could look at it and say, hey, he was big on the glass. Or you could say, hey, he gave you 14 points. Or you could say that he had 8 assists and right. led the Knicks. His passing ability tonight was fantastic. I think he had, I mean, he had those assists going early. He had like 3 or 4 assists, I felt like, in like almost like the first quarter. So I mean, he was a big difference maker in this game. And that's the problem, is that I felt that, hey, you know, no Mitchell Robinson, okay, you're probably going to see a little bit more Precious Achiuwa, but like maybe this is an opportunity that the Pacers could take advantage of. And they couldn't. I thought even Achiuwa played good minutes for the Knicks at times. He had 3 offensive rebounds. I felt like he was someone that those rebounds, they just felt timely at times. Like, they felt almost kind of like back-breaking rebounds that gave the Knicks a lot of momentum. Now, the Knicks fed off of those rebounds, and they fed off of that crowd. That crowd, was rocking. You could hear it through the TV. And Indiana's going to need to bring that. They have won the last 8 home games that they have played, undefeated in the playoffs. They won all 3 games. If the Pacers crowd isn't as lively as could be for game 3, this one's over. And yeah, I know you mentioned before that, you know, OG from, look, I'm no doctor, I've told you guys that before, but that looked like a bad hamstring injury.
Yeah,
and the Pacers and Knicks don't have a lot of time off in this series. I find that hard to believe that he's going to be out there. And if he is, being anywhere near 100% going into game 3, and I think the Pacers should be treating that game like it's game 7.
Right. I mean, they have to at this point. Their backs are against the wall. They got to protect home court. They got to win these 2 games. And if they can win, I mean, they can win both their games at home. Like, that would not shock me whatsoever and make this a 3-game series heading back to game 5 against New York. Now, they've got to be a lot better, and I think that they'll be better in front of their home crowd, because the energy from the home crowd, like you mentioned, it is gonna play a factor. Like, playing on the road is very tough, and the truth of the matter is Indiana has played pretty well on the road in this playoff series, despite their defense being atrocious. Like, giving up 130 points to the Knicks, you know, they gave up 121 last game, gave up 130 this one. Like, you can't win games when you're doing that, and your defense has been that atrocious. So it's been a Jalen Brunson show. We knew that was going to happen, but it's the others that have continued to just absolutely obliterate the Pacers. And, you know, it's been a different mix of them every in the first 2 games. So I agree with you, though. They have to come out and they have to punch hard in the third quarter, or in game 3, and really make it known that, hey, you know, we're not dying yet. You know, we may have lost the first 2 games, but we have a chance to protect home court, and they can do it. Like, I've had people say, if the Pacers don't win game 2, the series is over. I don't agree with you. I understand why people are upset. The Pacers play like they have, it's over, right? But if they can turn things around, and the OG thing is going to be huge, because OG is one that has been often injury prone throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
As great of a player as he is, he's dealt with injuries almost every single season that's kept him out multiple games. And that's a reason. There's a reason why he doesn't have a lot of miles on him this season, because he missed a lot of time with that elbow injury for the Knicks. So with the hamstring injury, that's interesting to keep an eye on. But like, the fact that Indiana knew Brunson had a foot injury and really struggled to attack him, the Knicks have done such a good job of keeping Brunson out of the Pacers' offensive attack plans. And Brunson's been able to kind of be hidden on defense, and that's where he's able to save all that energy for his offensive play. And Nembhard, we've seen it through the first 2 games. He cannot do it alone. So you're going to have to figure something out. You're going to have to make an adjustment and really adjust hard. And I liked how physical Nembhard got with Brunson early on, but you can't expect that to be the way that you play for 48 minutes.
No, it's just not realistic. And when you're thinking about 48 minutes, I'm looking at this Knicks team, and Josh Hart is probably going to play every second of this series. Oh, he's played 48 minutes in both games. He's averaging actually about 47 minutes per game in the playoffs overall. So the Knicks are really, I mean, they're trusting their guys. DiVincenzo played 44 minutes himself. I keep telling myself, okay, DiVincenzo's due to come back to earth. I mean, DiVincenzo averaged 15.5 points per game in the regular season. He's at about 27 points per game in the playoffs. Josh Hart averaged close to 10 points per game. I mean, he's killing the Pacers right now. He had think it was 24 last game, 19 this game. Like, he's doing a little bit of everything, and it's just right now I feel like the Pacers just they don't have an answer for this Knicks starting five that's been real good. But with OG, say that OG is out. I mean, the you would imagine that I guess the Knicks move Precious Achiuwa into the starting lineup. They're probably going, you know, a little bit with the double big type of approach. And I think that that Knicks rotation gets even shorter. The Deuce McBride minutes were not good for the Knicks. Alec Burks played about 1 minute total. So right now, I mean, the Knicks, they're running out of bodies. And I just think that the Pacers have to find a way to take advantage of this. They have really yet to get anybody in foul trouble. I know DiVincenzo had five fouls last time. You know, the refs didn't miss a call that would have had him foul out. But other than that, no one was even a threat to be in foul trouble tonight. The Pacers need to be more aggressive. They need to get more out of their bigs, specifically Turner and Siakam. I really feel need to set that tone in game three because you saw Haliburton set the tone. I think absolutely he did what was needed in that first half. It was up to anybody else to also step up. And I think in the second half, it was a ghost town. And right now in game one, I was disappointed because I felt the Pacers got robbed. In game two, I just felt like they got out-hustled. And I felt that the Knicks just showed more heart. And that's never what you want to say about your team.
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and interrupt you here and just talk about this because Rick Carlisle is now at the podium and he is definitely doing what we were hoping he would do. Rick Carlisle says that there were 29 plays the Pacers thought were called the wrong way in game one, but they didn't submit it to the league. He's now listing some examples from tonight where he thought the calls were wrong via Tony East on Twitter. We're going to submit these calls tonight, New York. Get ready. You're going to see them. We deserve a fair shot. There's not a consistent balance. That's disappointing. So definitely letting the media know his frustrations with this crap. And I definitely agree that there has been some egregious calls and a very inconsistent whistle. And it's no surprise to me. I mean, it's easier to – I feel like momentum shifts in a home arena. And I feel like home teams always get more of a benefit of the doubt with the calls. Like, it's just the way it is. But you're professional referees. You're the best in the world. You can't allow the crowd to impact you. And I understand it's a human element type of thing. And I don't want to say that I'm using tonight's loss as a blame the refs for the Pacers losing. They got their butts kicked in the second half. They didn't deserve to win this game. But I understand Carlisle's frustration. And I'm glad that he's finally saying something to the media, because to me that says he's standing up for his players. And clearly, I mean, I don't know how many times I saw the Pacers get knocked to the ground or they don't flop on a call and they don't get anything. Carlisle's right. There is not a consistent whistle. And I mean, you saw Knicks fans all over the place saying, we got lucky in game one to walk away with that one. I'm not going to say that for game two, but I definitely think now there are some stupid Knicks fans that are going to sit there and say, oh, you're just a bunch of crybabies, whatever. But they would be doing the exact same thing if the calls were going this way for Indiana.
No, they would. I had people that were texting me that I hadn't spoken to in about 10 years just saying, dude, I'm so sorry, man. You guys got robbed. It was like everybody knew it. These are random fans of every different team. But like at the same point, look, you know, this game, it's a different storyline. I don't think that there's, you know, it was easy to have the two storylines of game one, Haliburton didn't show up on the refs. This one, it's just the Pacers have been a good team for a decent chunk of this series, but not in the fourth quarter. They really haven't. And they played a good third quarter last game, but in this situation, I mean, as good as the Pacers were in the first half, I mean, you look at this, 36 points in the first quarter, 37 in the second quarter, 18 points in a playoff game. That's going to be really hard to come back from it and win that game. But I need to know what's going on in those locker rooms right now, because I just feel like right now, and I'm just imagining this, I feel like Brunson was like, hey, I'm back. Like, hop on my back. I'm going to take us to where we got to go. And I just don't know what that conversation was like for Indiana, but there was not one player that really set that tone in that third quarter that really established their presence. And they got to really look at themselves in the mirror, knowing that you're going back to game three. You have to lay it all on the line. And I would like to believe that this team and this fan base will respond, because as great of a season as it's been, we can't go out like this. Not four, not even five. That's not acceptable at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you just kind of realize where this team's at, and I'm going to say this, and it might sound like a bit of a hot take, but there is a reason why last year in the offseason or at the end of season presser, Kevin Pritchard said, we don't know if Aaron Nesmith is a starter or a sixth man. And they gave him a contract as a guy that's coming off the bench. You know, to me, he is not good enough offensively to be a starter. And I understand that he had flashes earlier this season where he was like the second best pacer for a good stretch. But when you're not hitting your threes and you're getting that lost defensively, you know, there's no reason why you should be getting guaranteed minutes out there, 30-some minutes, because you're not impacting the game like you had been before. And this is an easy opportunity to kind of knock a guy down, you know, knock a guy while he's down. But it's just like, I'm just sitting here watching this game. And the more and more I watch Nesmith, the more and more frustrated I got. And, you know, it's just because you need him to make shots when he's open and he's just not hitting them that much. And defensively, he's been just not good. So I've been more impressed with how Ben Shepherd moves around, gets himself, you know, set to take better shots. His shot looks better. It looks more fluid. He just looks like he's more under control when he plays. And, you know, Nesmith had that huge dunk last game. I mean, he's had some moments. Like, he's not been bad. He's just not been that good. And this is where the Pacers, and I tweeted this out in the first half or the first quarter. I said, just imagining this team with Mathurin and Jairus Walker next year, they're going to be a lot better. But having a guy like Jairus Walker, who's 6'8", has a 7'3" wingspan, if he's got a year under his belt and he's able to be a little bit more consistent defensively, someone like that is probably going to give a guy like Jalen Brunson more fits than the other options the Pacers have defensively.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, Nesmith shot about just under 31% from three last series against the Bucks. He's now 2 of 8 against New York. I mean, I just don't know where that three-point shot has gone that was just so efficient in the regular season. He hasn't been the same player. And, yeah, you know, like we touched on before, I don't see Rick changing, you know, and he starts the starting lineup now. As good as Obi Toppin's been, I just don't think that that's going to be a move or anything, or you're not going to move, you know, Ben Shepherd in. But I just think that right now, yeah, you got to see something out of Nesmith. You really do. And, you know, to your point before, like, I think the fan base would unanimously agree Aaron Nesmith would be better as a sixth man. This Pacers team is just so bad defensively that they need him to be what he is, because he is one of the better defenders on this team. He'd be a better defender on many teams. But, yeah, Jairus Walker can reach his full potential and you get Mathurin back, just the idea of having those two in this series just feels like the Pacers would never really have weak moments where they're not getting any offense in, or, you know, with Jairus Walker just could influence the game in many different avenues. That's the exciting point about this team, is that, you know, there's still internal growth that will be coming. But for right now, I think you could say kind of that the Pacers played good enough to potentially win two games, but definitely good enough to be at 1-1 in this series. The fact that you're down 2-0 just shows that this New York team, they're scrappy, because the same thing happened against the 76ers. They stole the first two games by a very, very low margin, even in times where they have comebacks. And right now you've seen a Pacers team that actually has had leads and blown it, let alone not been able to come back when trailing.
Yeah, the Knicks, they're just a really good team. You have to give them credit. Like, the guys they play, the guys that are out there, they just do it on both ends. And I will say this, Brunson is not a great defender, but they have a system set up in place where he's able to kind of be hidden. And I think he might be a little bit more exposed come the next series if they get past Indiana and play more than likely Boston. There's a lot less options to hide him out there. But with Indiana, you've got a guy in Aaron Nesmith who you can easily hide anybody on. I mean, the Bucks were putting Brook Lopez on him at one point. So it's just, and I'm not saying that to knock on Nesmith, but he's just been so inconsistent and so bad offensively that he's a non-threat out there. And it's almost like you're going back to the Derek McKee days when he wasn't giving you anything, but basketball was a lot different than you weren't looking for spacing. So, you know, I'm not trying to rip Nesmith too much. I really am not, because I like the guy. I think he's a good player, but I think you're just seeing more and more like Nimhard being tasked with trying to guard Brunson. He's in year two of his career. This is a great experience thing for him, but I just don't think he's ready. And he's doing the best that he can, but I think maybe if you put McConnell in there a little bit more for Nesmith, move Nimhard over to DiVincenzo, you might see a little bit better defensive scheme set up there for Indiana to kind of take away some of the stuff they're doing. But overall, I mean, as we kind of wrap this up here, Fachi, I know it's been pretty negative, but like, how can you be positive? The only good thing is you have seen this team compete on the road for two very, very tough environment games against New York in the Garden and have a chance to be able to maybe pull away a victory here. So less in game two than game one, but you still saw this team really fight hard and really make it difficult for New York. If they can string together a complete game in game three and in game four, they can make this a series. They just have to not play so bad. And I think Carlisle alluded to the start of the game and the third quarters, and that all falls on the shoulders of what is supposed to be your top five players.
Yeah. I mean, look, as dull as things feel right now at this moment, trailing two games to nothing, I don't think I've ever been more confident that the Pacers are going to come out and take care of business in game three when they go back to Indiana. They've been that good at home. Like I mentioned, 3-0 in the playoffs, won their last eight dating back to the regular season. I do think that the Pacers will win game three because I think they're going to feel like their lives are on the line in that game. You're getting a banged-up Knicks team that is not going to have much time to recover. And I think the Pacers will take advantage of that. I think that if you can win game three, you could change the whole outlook of this series. But what we're seeing right now is growing pains. There's a lot of players on this team that have never been this far and this battle-tested in the playoffs. Like, they passed the test against the Bucks, the one game three, you know, or whatever it was with the Tyrese. Yeah, game three. Tyrese Haliburton game winner. I mean, awesome, awesome stuff. But these are some close games that they have just been out-hustled late in. And I think that these are the experiences that you really do learn from. So before this series is just over and labeled as a learning experience, let's take game three. Let's bounce back at home. If you have an opportunity to be there, please show up, be loud, and make a difference.
Yeah, I don't know exactly if I feel good about the Pacers in game three, because after watching these two games, I don't feel good, honestly. You know, I've had people ask me, like, what do you think? I'm like, well, the Pacers might win game two, but I still got the Knicks in seven. Like, I just don't think this Pacers team – what'd you say?
Game three is ours. Game four, okay. God, it could be another story. Game three is ours.
All right, you call it, Fachi. I'm not going to predict any wins for the Pacers because I felt like – all day, I felt like, you know what, Indiana's going to make this a series. Like, I was starting to believe what Chris Denari said last night. Like, Indiana can win this series. But, yeah, I'm not feeling as confident after this one. But I'm just going to say, like, it's hard to feel confident when you haven't seen this team put together a good collective 48 minutes of basketball against this Knicks team so far in the first two games. Now, I will close out my final thoughts or my comments here on the podcast by reading J. Michael, our beloved former beat writer from the Indy Star, probably the best one to do it in a very long time at the Star. He was tweeting about this game, and he said, Kevin Pritchard should not fly back with the team tonight. He should be at Adam Silver's office first thing Thursday morning and go in there like Ice Cube in the NWA movie. If you don't get the right answers, redecorate.
Hey, well, I mean, hey, it's interesting. Love me some J. Michael. I think right now I'm hoping they could just rally around each other. I think that there's no way we can point the finger anywhere else other than just respond. Look in the mirror and just say, we need to be better. Because this Knicks team right now, when the times are getting tough, they ain't running. They're sticking together. And I think that right now the Pacers need to just have each other's back, respond, game three. That's really where you got to set the tone. If the Pacers go down 3-0, I mean, we obviously know that this series is absolutely done. And I don't want to be the guy who's out there saying, come on, just don't get swept. I don't want to be in that spot. So let's just take care of business in game three.
All right, everybody. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today's episode. You know where to find us at on social media. We're not going to give you the full rundown because I don't want to set Fachi up for a Let's Go Pacers after two bad losses, you know, tough losses, I should say, here in the series. But we will be back tomorrow talking with Kelly Eco from The Athletic. Kelly was able to cover the Pacers nationally for The Athletic in the first round, not doing it in this round, but still, I know he is paying attention to the playoffs, so can't wait to get his thoughts on this team and what he's seen through the first two games and kind of give us more of a national perspective instead of maybe such a, you know, a Pacers or a Knicks perspective. So it's going to be nice to hear from him. And then Obviously, we'll be back Friday night with a post-game recap show for you guys Saturday morning. And then hopefully we're talking about a win, Focci. That's what I'm hoping. But follow Focci on Instagram and Twitter at _FACCI. I'm at @AlexGoldenNBA. And we will talk to y'all tomorrow.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.